Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you are an author listening in to today's interview and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I am with an author of 17 American Indian historical romances. She is Karen Kay. Karen has been praised by reviewers and fans alike for bringing insight into the everyday life of the American Indian culture of the past. As reviewer Suzanne Tucker once wrote, Miss Kay never fails to capture the pride, the passion, and the spirit of the American Indian. As in each and every one of her mesmerizing Indian stories, we are moved beyond words. We feel more, we understand better, and we love deeper. They are healing stories of hope, of tenderness, of forgiveness, and of great beauty and awe. Karen Kay, whose great-grandmother was a Choctaw Indian, is honored to be able to write about the American Indian culture. With the power of romance, I hope to bring about an awareness of the American Indians' concept of honor and what it meant for them to live as free men and free women, she says. These are some things that should never be forgotten. And I am just thrilled to learn more, so let's get started. Welcome to the network, Karen.
Thank you so much. Hi, Pat. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you here today. There's so much we want to talk about. But before we begin with your books, why don't you set the stage a bit and tell us a bit about your background and how and when you found out you had American Indian roots?
Wow. Okay. Well, as I was growing up, I always kind of figured maybe there might be some American Indian in my background because I have, you know, very dark hair, very dark eyes, and then I have always loved the American Indian culture. And when I was growing up, I was always the Indian and always sympathized with them, even when they weren't portrayed in a particularly good light. I always felt there was more to the story. And when it came time for me to start writing, I picked the American Indian. At that time, there were lots of historical American Indian stories, and I loved them. I just absolutely loved them. And so I started writing what I loved, really, and began to research. And as I researched, I started loving it even more. And to this day, I really think that the research is the icing on the cake. It takes you places that you never really ever expected to go. And you learn things that you wonder, why didn't I know this before? And so that's really what started my writing about the American Indian, is that I always, from the moment I remember, I always have loved that. It wasn't until actually I started writing the American Indian romance that I discovered that I did have history. It's Choctaw. I just never knew until then. And so that was a nice little surprise.
Was that through some genealogy studies, or did a family member tell you? How did you find out?
Well, apparently, I was very young at the time, but my father did a genealogy and found the Native American history. And my grandmother, I came to find out, his mother, was very proud of her history, and somehow it just never trickled on down to me so that I knew. And then I was too young to really know much about what my father was doing or what he found, but my brother, who is 4 years older than myself, remembers him talking about it and talking about that genealogy, which has, interestingly enough, been lost. You can no longer find that.
Oh.
But luckily, because my father died when I was also young, we know a little bit about it through my brother, and he's the one who told me about it. Now, another little piece of that is that my neighbor down the street, who was a very good friend of both my mother and my father, and just lived two doors away, and then her children were my best friends, actually. And once I started writing, she was on the phone, which was why I asked my brother about it. She said, Oh, I think it's wonderful that you're writing about the American Indian, especially considering your heritage. And I went, what heritage? And apparently her mother had been my grandmother's best friend.
Okay.
And that's how she had come to know about it.
Interesting how that starts
Small
to
town.
Come together. Yes. Very interesting. Wow. So what made you combine American Indian characters, history, and culture with romance?
Well, that's another story. When my children were young, my husband was often out of town, and I was alone with them. And because of the nature of his work, he wasn't able to support us financially. He was like always on internships or doing something like that. And so I was left to fend for everything. You know, I went out and I worked, and I took care of it. You know, and did it all. I was like a single mom without being a single mom. And during that time period, that was kind of rough for me because my children were very young. I discovered romance. I fell in love. I just fell in love with romance. Any kind, historical, contemporary, science fiction, paranormal, I ate it all up. I loved it. And I became a fan. Of that, and my favorite, of course, were the Native American stories. There were some of my favorite authors were Joanna Redd, I haven't seen any of her stories recently, but she was probably my favorite, and Cassie Edwards I loved. There were so many different authors, and one of the things I loved about romance was that it always ends well, and you know, I've never forgotten that. Those books became friends. And to this day, I've never forgotten how that just really lifted me out of a bad situation, you know. And so when I write, I try to keep that in mind, that sometimes these books become friends to people.
I like that. It was therapy for you, and now you understand what that did for you, and I'm sure that your writing is doing that for others as well.
I do hope so. Mm-hmm. I do try to keep that in mind. You know, we're entertaining, yes, but we're also just putting a little bit of, you know, truth here and there, and always making it so that it ends well. And I think that romance in particular can be extremely uplifting.
No, I agree. It's a positive read is what it is.
Yes.
Well, now you have written several series as well as novels, and I mentioned there's over 17. I don't think we'll have time to hit them all. So why don't you share one or two with us that you think has a message that you would like to focus on today?
Well, I have a new book
out
right now called Seneca Surrender, and the companion of that is a book called Black Eagle. And those two books are not about the West. Most of my books are in the West, which I love. I love the West. But I brought some stories into the East, particularly the Iroquois Confederation. I've lived in the East. I used to live in Vermont. And I love the beauty of the falls and the beauty of the summer and the spring. This area with their deciduous trees, like right now, it's just amazingly gorgeous with the reds and the yellows and the golds and the oranges. It's so beautiful. And I wanted to write about that, but I also had struck up a friendship, oddly enough, through a radio, through a radio interviewer, not an interviewer, he had a radio show, Michael Bednarik, who was a libertarian presidential candidate, mm-hmm. of all things, in 2004, and struck up a friendship with him, and my eyes were open to some of the things that he was telling me, you know, about different things on freedom and what that means and that sort of thing. And that drew me also to our founding fathers, because he was always talking about those and, you know, what they did and the Constitution and blah, blah, you know, on and on. And so I became interested in that time period, 1776, around the French and Indian War. And I discovered the Iroquois, and that the Iroquois had so positively influenced our founding fathers. I had not known that. And that I found fascinating. And I wanted to delve into that research and find out, well, who were the Iroquois? What happened? that they themselves founded this republic that, is, as far as I know, it's one of the oldest living republics of its kind. And it was here, you know, in the New York area, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania area. Before it was disbanded, it was about 500 years old. And what happened? You know, how come they did this? And what did they think? And what form of government? Benjamin Franklin, for instance, was extremely influenced by the Iroquois form of government. Their favorite saying was, "We counsel together." And the other, you know, I just became fascinated with the Iroquois, especially. And you might appreciate this. I hope some other people do, too. Other women might appreciate this. The women held the power of the tribe. The women elected all the officials. If they didn't like what he was doing, he was instantly out. They put someone else in there. They were behind the scenes, but they held all the power of the tribe. That I found fascinating.
Absolutely. I think you're saying things that most people don't know about or don't realize. And yet, if you think about it, if you had some of our leaders at the time, Benjamin Franklin and so on, that are interacting with the Iroquois, obviously they're going to learn and pick up from them. So that makes sense, but I don't think anyone really has given that much thought or any credit.
No, not really. I mean, we know about our roots in Roman law, and we know about the Greece, Pericles, for instance, who wrote many things about government and freedom, et cetera. We know about those, and we know our founding fathers were heavily influenced, particularly by the age of Pericles. But we don't hear much about our own heritage that influenced them so greatly, which were the Iroquois. There's a story, now I don't know how true it is, but there's a story that Thomas Paine spent over a period of at least a few months, maybe more, living with the Iroquois to learn about them and to learn about their point of view and et cetera. And I know when we were putting our own Articles of Confederation, for instance, and Declaration of Independence together, the Iroquois counseled with some of our founding fathers. Mm-hmm. I found that fascinating.
Yes. Now, are there any of these groups still around?
Oh, definitely. You know, I have recently relocated to the East, and I have not checked out these things on a first-hand basis. But I do know that the Iroquois are still here, that they still have powwows, they dance, they keep their traditions alive. Part of their tribe is also in Canada, mm-hmm. and I believe that they even have a reserve there in Canada. I'm not sure about that specifically, but they keep the traditions alive, and that's how one of the ways I found out was I just did the research of different books that have been written from the Iroquois themselves about their history, which is a fascinating history. It's absolutely fascinating how the Iroquois form of government came about, and it was. It was originally established to end war forever and bring peace to Turtle Island. And it was their plan and their hope that they would involve all the tribes of North America, which they called Turtle Island, in this particular confederation so that they could bring peace to Turtle Island. And I know of very, very few governments that have been founded for the very specific purpose of bringing peace to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Wow, we can use a little peace on Turtle Island ourselves, can't we?
Yes, I think so.
Yes. Now, as you're writing your stories, your characters, and I think I found something on a video I saw of you where you have a cat, yes, a cat, who was the inspiration for one of the heroines in one of your books.
One of the heroines of my story.
So I need to understand how we have a cat involved in this.
We have two cats. One of my stories, Princess Sierra, was my little Princess Sierra cat. It was based on her personality. And then my other story, Callie. It was another calico cat that I had. They were both calicos. definitely had personality. And Cali was based on Cali the Calco. And so actually two of my characters were based on my cats.
I love that. What about the rest of your characters? Do you look back to history, or are these composites of people you know? Where do your characters come from?
A lot of my heroines and my heroes both come from people that I know. Often if I'm basing a character on a friend of mine, I'll mention them in the beginning, you know, like a tribute to them, who they are. They're not the whole person, of course. I rarely write about myself. I write about my friends. Actually, rarely means I haven't done it. I don't write about myself. I write about my friends. And because I find my friends inspirational. Mm-hmm. You know, the love that you feel for them helps you to build the character that you're trying to develop in the story, because you already love this person. Mm-hmm. And I find that really helps to build the character. And the same is true for my male characters. Now, that's the female characters. Mm-hmm. My male characters are based on people also, and I usually will try to say who those are in the beginning of the story. There's many, many people that I have. One, my favorite cousin was an inspiration. Another was Michael Badnarik again. Mm-hmm. But the one that probably inspires me more than anything is my husband. Mm-hmm. Somehow or another, no matter if I'm basing a character on someone else, my husband gets in that story somehow.
He shines through, right?
He really does.
I like that.
And I was in the middle of writing my third book. Was it my third? Fourth. My fourth book, Greyhawk's Lady, when I met my husband and married him. That all happened while I was writing that story. And the first kiss that we ever had is in that book. My reaction to it, knocked my socks off. And so, of course, it found its way into my book.
Well, I'm glad you found true romance in your own life as well.
Yes, thank you.
No, that's nice. I mean, you could obviously write honestly about it. Now, is there a common theme or goal or purpose underlying all of your books?
There is, and I try to be extremely subtle about it because I'm not trying to preach. I really am trying to entertain. But there is a common theme, which is the truth of how those cultures were. I think that's one of the reasons I was so fascinated with the Iroquois, because in finding the truth about their tribe, it took me places that I had never thought I would go, or it made me learn things I never realized were there. And so a lot of my stories are about getting the truth out there. Unfortunately, I do think that the movies of the past, the movies that I grew up with, like in the 50s and that sort of thing, put a stereotype character upon the Native American, the American Indian, if you want to say, that is not true. Mm-hmm. Just not true. Yes, they were stoic. Yes, they were very heroic in many different ways. And, you know, we all have our good and bad in the tribe. But I believe that Hollywood based a lot of its characters on the writings of, what was his name, McGlinsey? Something like that. He was a trader who was himself rarely sober. And he wrote about the Indians, and I think he kind of pushed his own character off on the Native Americans. And it was far from glowing, a report. And I forget his name. I think it was McGlinsey, something like that. And one of the things that I want to do is just bring the truth out. You know, what were their everyday activities? What did they think? How did they deal with things like murder? How did they deal with things like lying in the tribe, or those who would seek to have their own ends rather than the good of their families and friends? How did they do these things when confronted with lies or actions that they didn't understand? What did they try to do? You know, and try to paint the story as I find it written by people who were not prejudiced. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found, that if you don't mind me just kind of going into a little bit of the history of the Iroquois and how it came about, because it's fascinating. Long ago, the people were known to be cannibals and not doing real well. And there was a story of the who they call the peacemaker, who met Hiawatha, the real Hiawatha, not the Hiawatha of Longfellow's poem, but the real Hiawatha, who came to know the peacemaker. And Hiawatha had family problems, and that several of his children were killed by people in his own tribe. And he was grieving. And the peacemaker came upon him and brought him out of his grief. And the story goes that the peacemaker stuttered. He couldn't speak the language very well, and he needed someone to speak for him because he wanted to bring peace to these tribe or unite them. And so he and Hiawatha enlisted the aid of a woman whose name escapes me right now. And they went about getting each of the separate tribes to become part of the Confederation. And the last one to become part of the Confederation had a fellow in it whose hair was supposedly made of snakes. And Hiawatha supposedly combed his hair, and he became, and he turned around. Instead of being this evil person, he turned around to be a good person. And then they developed this entire confederation to bring peace to the tribes and to unite them so that they would be strong and invincible and help to unite the whole of Turtle Island. Fascinating.
Oh my, you are just filled with so much information. You need to keep writing.
Thank you.
I need to get all of this out there. You also have a project, in addition to all of the writing that you do, that encourages literacy?
Yes. Now, that was with the Blackfeet, and I was writing about the Blackfeet at the time. That particular literacy project was in full bloom in the early, in the late 90s and the early part of the 21st century. And then it disbanded. I still have it up on my website because I love it, and I still go back to the Blackfeet Reservation from time to time and reconnect with all the people who were a part of that project. It was an incredible project because some people who couldn't read started to read, and every single person who came through that project, let's say they had not had literacy or they hadn't been able to go out and work, once they finished that project, they all went out to do well in whatever they chose to do and worked and were supporting their families, etc. It was extremely helpful in that regard.
Wow, so you are really immersed in this. You do a lot of traveling.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do love it.
No, I think it's very evident that you do love it and very passionate about it. And it's fairly clear just in our conversation today. You also, on your website, you offer writing tips and you offer romance tips. And we definitely don't want to let you escape without you giving at least one of your best writing tips and your best romance tips.
One of my best writing tips. You know, in all honesty, my best writing tip is to just write. Not pay attention to what other people think about it unless you want to get published. And then it's nice to have another opinion because there can be things that you missed that another person can bring to the table so long as they don't invalidate what you've done. That's so important because when you're writing, another person's invalidation of what you have done can just kill you. As a writer, and sometimes it can take months to recover from that. But my biggest tip would be to just write. You know, forget about grammar, forget about sentence structure, forget about all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you just write, and once you have written, say, a few chapters, then go back and perhaps, you know, hone it so it's good sentence structure and grammatically correct, or if you're not good at that, find a friend who is and have them go over it and just correct the grammar. But my biggest writing tip would be that you don't worry about the other things. What you're doing is you're telling a story. and you're telling a story with words. And the most important thing is your story, not grammar and not spelling and not sentence structure necessarily. Those all help you to, in the end, tell the story, you know, because we all have agreements as to how something should flow and what a sentence is and blah, blah, blah. But your first and primary goal is to tell a story. And so you just sit and tell the story. Mm-hmm. You write and you write and you write and you write as often as you can. Sometimes in today's world, because of whatever is the economic status, one can't write every day. But at least, you know, try to write at least once a week, at least that. And just do it. Just, you know, don't worry about page count. Don't worry about anything except the story. And get that story down.
That's excellent advice. I really appreciate that you touched on that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I know a lot of people talk about voice and different things like that. And my really best advice is don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. After you've written a few books and that sort of thing, you'll have your voice.
Right. Yes.
You know, you will have it. You don't even worry about that. Mm-hmm. That will come.
It comes.
Exactly. You know, you just write and you story tell. You tell the story that is inside you that you want to share with other people.
Great advice.
Thank you.
Now let's hit on your best romance advice. I know you have some.
You know, I kind of forget what I wrote down there. I think probably one of the best romance tips that I can possibly think of is to talk.
Yeah.
I know that sounds so unromantic. It's different ways. To just talk. But, you know, sometimes when you're involved in a relationship and let's say you get upset about something and maybe the impulse is to withdraw and just keep it in yourself and not talk about it. And I think the only thing that really keeps a romance, a real romance with love and respect alive is talking, you know, not necessarily harping on the other person or anything like that, but if, you know, if one's upset, one had better talk about it, because I don't know if any other way to resolve things except to talk.
Absolutely. Some true conversations. Yeah, true conversations from the heart. I believe you are right. You are quite a wise lady.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Yeah, well.
But I think that would be the best. I mean, there's all kinds of little things.
Sure.
You can do, candlelight.
Right.
And music and different things like that, but I just really think that the most important thing is talking, and you know, not being upset if the other person is upset, but listening and then you know, talking back, and you know, because sometimes I also think that we put images on the other person that we think that they are. I know that sounds silly,
no, that's very true, very
you know,
true.
They do something and then. It might trigger something within us, and then we think, oh, well, they're acting like this. You know, this is, oh, I know what that is. And we put that image on them, and that's not what it was. Mm-hmm. And when you talk, the other person can go, oh, my gosh, I didn't mean that. Mm-hmm. Here's what I was really thinking. You know, and you, oh, really? Oh, you know? And it kind of gives the person the other chance to know how what they did was received, but then also you get to the heart of the matter,
mm-hmm.
I guess you might say. You can then understand where what they were saying, and almost always it's some sort of, I don't know how else to say it, but image of another person or another situation that maybe triggers that, and that's what we think it is, and get upset probably more about that than...
Exactly. Yeah, two great pieces of advice from you. Thank you. Well, now we've talked about a lot of different things today, and we're going to wrap up. Is there anything that we missed that you would like to bring up?
I do have a book out right now. It's Seneca Surrender. It's at Amazon. You can just, I don't have the exact link, but you can type in Seneca Surrender by Karen Kay, and it'll pull it all up.
Okay.
That's my latest book. Amazingly enough, in that book, the two characters talk a lot, but other things happen too. So I would love to just let people know, anyone who's listening to the show, that I do have that book out, and it has a companion with it Black Eagle, and it is about the Iroquois, which was my opportunity to really bring about some little-known facts about the Iroquois that I found fascinating, like a ceremony that they have in order to heal grief of a person, because at that time a lot of war was caused by murders of people, and there was revenge. So this one would be revenge, and then they would revenge, and then they would, and, you know, this whole long cycle, revenge, revenge. And so they had a ceremony dealing with wampum, which are those little beads in a belt, that would cure or make a person whole and bring about a condition where the person was no longer grieving. And they also believed that once that was done, the spirit of the departed person would feel free to go on to whatever awaited them, you know, in your in their next life, if you believe in that, or to their next existence, or whatever you want to say. But then they would be free also to go on and not kind of haunt people.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it.
And this book, Seneca Surrender, is about a wife of the warrior who was brutally murdered and is still with him and guiding him to the murderer so that she can feel avenged and go on to her whatever she's going to do. And so that this is a story about that. And it's actually based on an actual true story of a woman who did die and continued to remain with her husband and cook for him and have all his clothes pressed. Actual true story about that.
Wow, so that's in the book Seneca Surrender.
Yes.
All right. Well, now, where can folks go then to learn more about you and to purchase your books? I know you mentioned Amazon, but do you have any other sites you want to send them to?
I do. I have two sites. The main one is Novels, Novels, -by-karenk.com.
Okay, I'm jotting that down. Novels-by-karenk.com.
And then, yes, and then there are all of my books. And although I don't sell my books on my site, there's always, you can always get to the site that does sell them. There's a button, there's
right.
a link.
Right. Wow, Karen, what a pleasure to just learn a fraction of what you know and about the American Indians and the Iroquois especially. And so I encourage everyone to head over to your website, novels-by-karenk.com. Head over to Amazon and look up Seneca Surrender by Karen K, Black Eagle by Karen K. It's just an outstanding conversation with you, and I appreciate it so much, and we may have to do this again just to learn a little bit more. So thank you so much for sharing you and your wisdom with us today.
Wow. Thank you very much, Pat, and thanks for inviting me.